Okay, so we're still talking about how we talk to children about life. And I don't think that there's... And she says later, too, we've talked about how you communicate with your children about God and how you communicate with them about life. And those are the same thing, you know? If we're not communicating with our children about life in a godly manner, then we've failed them. I think we got down to there's time for laughter on page 44. Is that what everybody else said, Mark? Just a little brief thing about how when we can, humor is a helpful thing. It asks how many times have you tried to discipline a child and they do something really cute and you laugh and it's hard to stay with it. And that's true, but you have to be very cautious because children can manipulate that very early. Very early on they learn that that's a good way to get out of whatever punishment. We do need to define the terms discipline and punishment. They're different things. Punishment is always negative. It's a way that you make someone... When I was a 4-H agent, so I worked with kids for a long time. And I didn't have any children at that time. I didn't have any kids, so I was 27 years old. And I would see these children. This is 4-H. It's kind of cream of the crop kids, great families. And still you would see the kids, you know, off on tangents doing stuff they shouldn't do. But I learned very early on because of that never to say my children will never... Because I saw these cream of the crop families and their kids were, and there were good parents, involved parents. I just learned to say I can make them regret having done whatever it is they're going to choose to do. And that's what punishment is about. Punishment's about regret and that you won't do it again because the consequences were harmful to you. Discipline is a broader term. It encompasses punishment. But discipline's a more important term, I think, because if you discipline someone, you want them to be your disciple, to follow in your way. We practice the discipline of Christianity because we follow Christ. We're his disciples. So I think it's really, really important that we understand the difference between discipline, the overarching thing, and punishment, which is a part of discipline. But to discipline our children means to put them in a path following us, following Christ, and using the tools that are necessary to keep them in that path. Sometimes that's punishment. Sometimes it's reward. Sometimes it's praise and encouragement. So all these things fall into the broad cover of discipline. But I think it's important that we note that discipline and punishment are not the same. Punishment can happen without discipline. Punishment can happen because you're angry. They poked your button. And that's something I struggled with, still struggle with. Roger and I have 6 kids between us. Yesterday I managed to have 3 of them mad at me at the same time. I didn't call the 2 that live elsewhere to see how they were feeling. But punishment can be something that we do for ourselves. Now, I am not saying we shouldn't punish children, because sometimes punishment's in order. We just need to make sure that we're doing it to discipline them and not to make us feel better. Because it's pretty easy to go in your head, they have made me so mad, I'll make them regret this. Not, I'll help them regret it so they won't do this behavior again, or it puts them on a bad path, but because they made me mad. And that was a very hard thing for me to do, to separate my feelings out. And I had to work really hard to learn. I practiced not saying, you made me mad, therefore... Because that's not a good enough reason to punish. Just because they made me mad, maybe I'm off track. And frankly, what I was always trying to teach my children is that nobody else's behavior can make us do something. So I couldn't very well say to them, well, I know I overreacted, but you made me mad, you made me do it. No. They didn't make me do anything. I chose to let their behavior influence mine in a bad way. And when I'm trying to teach them overall that you can't say I went to that drinking party because my friends made me. No, they didn't make you. You chose to. I can't very well jump out of that when I'm disciplining and say you made me do this to you. Now, you're being punished because you did this or you did this or you did this. Yeah. but not because you made me so mad that I couldn't help myself. Because that's wrong on a whole lot of levels, and it's wrong for me. So anyway, the difference between punishment and discipline. She goes on to talk about the very last part of that paragraph. Psychiatrists emphasize that many adults with personality problems seldom received praise when they were children. I don't like her choice of terms. I like what she's saying. Children need to be encouraged and built up and made to know that they're valuable, and valuable in our lives, not just God made you and you're wonderful, which is a good thing, but God made you and you're wonderful for me in my life. But praise and encouragement are also different words. And praise in our society and in this time of civilization has often become very hollow. A long time ago, I saw a cartoon, Doonesbury, I think, and the kid comes home from camp with like a million trophies, and his parents are going, "Wow, participated in soccer, ate your dinner," you know, all these totally unimportant details. And he goes, "Mom, Dad, get over it. It was an encouragement camp." And, you know, so he got a trophy for breathing, basically. And kids learn very quickly when they are in that. And I talk a lot with preschool teachers about this. Don't spend your time saying, "What a great picture." Spend your time saying, "I really like the way you used colors in that picture. Tell me about it," or "What else can you do with that?" You don't ignore what they did, but that hollow, overarching thing, kids learn real quickly that you're saying that to everybody in the room, so it doesn't mean anything to me. You know, if you tell each and every kid playing in the Watt Center, "That's a great tower," well, the fourth kid's going, "Watch, I'll build one two blocks high and see what she says." If she says, "That's a great tower," doesn't mean anything. How did you learn to do that? How did you know you could put six blocks on that and they wouldn't fall? What else could you build? So the same thing we can translate to our children, not just, "You're doing great in school." Okay, how do you know? "Wow, you made an 87 in that really tough science class that you were worried about. That's great. I'm really glad. How can we push that up a little bit? What can I do to help you?" So the difference in hollow praise and true encouragement that lets them move on to the next step, when you're dealing with spiritual issues, "You're such a good boy." Maybe, maybe not. "I know that that was a struggle for you. I heard your friends being so ugly to that little girl, and you didn't do it, and you defended her. I'm so proud of you for taking a stand, for being the person I know you are." That has a lot more impact and meaning to a child. They know you're in tune with their life, with what they're doing. Even in our world, I mean, I love it when my family says, "Great meal." I mean, that's really nice. I like it a lot more when they say, "This stroganoff was the best I ever ate." When they, it's not just something they say, you know. So, surely somebody has some comments about all those ramblings. Nobody's talking to me today. Praise, encouragement, you think there's a difference?
I like the statement she made just before the one you read. Good discipline includes not only disapprovable and punishment for bad behavior, but approval and reward for good behavior.
Right.
If a child if a child does something that really deserves a good pat on the back, it is horrible that the best thing you can come up with, it's about time.
Yeah. And how many times have we heard parents say that been guilty of similar things? Yeah. "I knew if you did what I told you, you would have this outcome."
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a little discouraging. And most of us, we would deal better with it, I think, if we would take those situations and put them on ourselves, either at work or in our home setting. You know, poor Roger, if I clean out a closet, when he comes in, he has to come see the closet. See what I did today? See what I did? And he better say it's good. Wow, what a great use of your time, you know, or something. Because everybody wants to feel appreciated for what they've done. And while all the global statements are really good, I love you so much, you're such a wonderful child, I'm so glad you're my daughter, any of those things, but having it narrowed down to what you did and how that impacted my life. Kate came in yesterday and she said, I'm so impressed at how clean your house is. Well, I'm looking around thinking it must have been really bad before because it's not too great right now. But she acknowledged something specific that I did, and it made me feel good. I looked around, well, it's not too bad. It could be better. Mother would think it could be better. She's a better housekeeper than I am.
Uh-oh. A lot of these people know me.
Okay, whoso shall offend one of these little ones? A child's confidence is built up layer by layer. We must make sure our discipline conveys caring and not rejection. And that's where punishment gets tricky. Again, I don't want anybody to leave here thinking that I don't believe in punishment. I do. There are things that the child needs to be punished for. Just like in society, there are things that adults do that they need to be punished for. But if we only punish, if that's the only way we discipline our child, we're going to lose them. They may turn into good adults, maybe, but we're going to lose them. We're going to lose our relationship with them because there's more to any person than the things they do wrong. And if we only focus on those, Randy's father was very, very negative, and Randy would tell you the same thing. I'm not saying anything that he wouldn't acknowledge. But whenever Randy would try to do something, there was always the, well, what if this happens? Or you should have done that. Or I knew this would happen. Always. And I saw him spend his whole adult life trying to make his dad happy, and he wasn't ever going to do it. And that's a very, very sad way to bring up children. And creates lots of problems for the kid. Because every child wants their parents to love them and approve of them. And every child, even those children who are hideously abused, when you work in the child welfare system, those kids want to go home.
They don't want to leave their mother.
They don't want to leave
their family.
Mm-mm. No matter how bad that is, they want to be home. So I think that's a real serious lesson for us to all learn, that just because they still love us, that's not a gauge for us on how we've done, because children innately want to be with their parents. Maybe if I put my glasses on. She says the child who has a sense of self-worth will strive to always validate that confidence, while the child who feels unimportant will feel nothing he does matters anyway. You can see that so much, especially, Carol, help me here, by middle school. You can see those kids who've given up, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Easily.
That they, you know, they're not going to be happy with me no matter what I do, so I'm not going to, what's the point? Why should I try? And sometimes you can see it earlier than that, but I think definitely by middle school age it's showing up. And then you've got those kids that aren't trying, aren't going to reach their potential because they don't see the point. No one is supporting them. No one is encouraging them. And there are some wonderful teachers that help mitigate some of that for some of these children. But to always go home to the mother who says, you'll never be worth anything, I knew that. Or you're just like your father. And that's a really, really bad insult to put on a kid, because it says, you're awful, your father's awful, the kid loves his father no matter what he's done to you. I mean, that's a real nasty comment to say to somebody. You should only say you're just like your father because you're so tall and handsome. You know, should only be those kinds of things, because loading kids up with our feelings about somebody is not fair.
And sometimes going around the back door, and I don't have any, for instance, and complimenting these kids, I mean the real abusive ones, the ones that have terrible home lives, you make progress that way.
You
a
do.
Way that you don't even think about.
You do. A lot of the little kids that I've worked with in Head Start and all have They don't have any money. They're not very clean, a lot of them. Smell pretty bad sometimes. And for you to hug them means a great deal to them because they're just a kid. And they don't understand why somebody's going to back away. And sometimes you just have to hold your breath and hug anyway. But they feel those things with society pushing them away for things they have no control over. If you're six, you don't have control over whether or not you're bathed. So when we react in a way that's kind of normal, because a little stinky kid, you know, it's kind of hard. But
you're not even allowed to hug now, are you? Are
you can hug.
You can hug.
It's not outlawed. You can't put your hands on a child in anger. You can't physically punish them, but you can hug. And even if they told me I couldn't, I would, because it's too important.
Well, you kind of have to, because they run up to you and do.
They're going to hug anyone, but it's not illegal to hug a child. You just, if you're a middle school male math teacher, you want to be real careful about that. But you know. Kaylee stopped by to see a teacher friend of hers, the guy she had really enjoyed his class. And of course, she's out of school and all. And it got, she stopped by after school to visit with him. It got kind of late. Called her and said, "Where are you?" "I'm at so-and-so's class." I said, "Who all's there?" And there were several students there. So we talked to her later about that was fine because there were several students, but that she should be very cautious about not putting him in a situation. And she said, "Even though I'm out of school?" And I said, "Trust me, just as long as there's a bunch of kids there, it's fine. But don't ever be alone with him because you're putting, I trust the man completely, I'm not worried about her, but you're putting him in a bad situation. Just don't do that to him. Because all that has to happen is for somebody to walk by and make a comment." On page 45. Says, as Dr. Jeannot points out in his book Between Parent and Child, which actually is a very good book, I've read that, the child who's continuously criticized as clumsy will accept this label. After all, his own mother should know. We need to be very, very, very cautious about labeling our children, even on something we think is innocuous. Kate's always been real self-conscious of her feet. Her feet are fairly large. Her brother and sister, of course, pointed that out to her on every possible occasion. So it was my job to make sure she understood that her feet were within normal range and just meant she would be a little taller than her sister. But when we constantly say things to kids, even things that we don't maybe think too much about, one phrase we use for a hair color sometimes is dirty blonde. I've heard little kids talk about that. My hair's dirty blonde. It's not pretty blonde. So, you know, just little things. We just need to think. This is like in every other communication in life.
It was dishwater
blonde. Yeah. You're snarling. You didn't like that?
No, I didn't like that.
See? Thank you for remembering.
Yeah, I remember.
Well, they used to call mine corn silk blonde.
But that's pretty.
I know, but it insulted me, so I look like a cornfield or something.
Corn silk is a pretty phrase, Mother.
What you're saying stays with us even as
absolutely. Absolutely it does. And kids are you can't control what the kids are going to say to each other. They're bad enough. We don't need to plow in with them too. You know, we need to be the refuge. Pass the potato chips. This just talks about how a kid would rather have a soggy potato chip than none at all. And that they're, I don't think the example's very good, but what she's saying is true. A kid wants the attention. If they can't get the attention through good behavior, then let's try some bad behavior. And some of the kids are quicker to go to that than others. Some are more needy of attention. Some are less patient. And so whatever it takes, they're going to get you to pay attention to them. So in as a method of punishment and discipline, one of the good ways to discourage that behavior is to completely ignore that kind of behavior. Now, that gets very, very tricky. Because at what point is enough's enough? You're in the grocery store. In fact, Roger was talking about he had to go to Walmart the other day, which we try not to do, but he had to go. And he said there was a kid, he was in the toy aisle 4 days before Christmas, And he said there was a child there who had started begging, first of all. Whining, that wasn't working. So he started yelling at his mother about what he wanted. And so, you know, in a way, I'm kind of sympathizing with her because she's ignoring that bad behavior, the begging and the pleading and the whining. But eventually he starts yelling. Well, at what point do you say, all right, I'm nodding, you're going to get some attention right now anyway. So it's a delicate balance. But when you are in a situation where you can ignore the bad behavior, it often pays off to just not pay any attention until you get the behavior you want. Doesn't always work. Can't always rely on that. I think I've told you all this before. I remember very well being at the grocery store with my mother. We were still going to Castleberry, so I couldn't have been more than 5 or 6. And we were there, and I was something that I wanted, and she kept telling me to be quiet, and I didn't do it. And she got up there. I'm sitting in the cart, so I'm a little kid because I'm in that thing. And she leans over and she says, "You embarrass me. When we get home, you're getting a spanking." So I've got an hour to sit there and think about that, hoping she'll forget, which she never forgot, ever, ever.
My side of the story is, though, I had gotten over her aggravating me or whatever happened, and I really didn't want to spank her,
right. But
I had said I would spank her when we got home. So I defeated her in the bathroom, put her over my knees, and gave her a little paddling.
You did. I remember it. I'm 60 years old, and I remember it well. But the point being that she ignored the bad behavior as long as she could. And then there was a point where you don't ignore it anymore. But it was a very quiet, calm thing. It wasn't jerking me up by the shoulder like I see so many people do get their kids. And I'm going, you're going to dislocate that kid's shoulder. And creating a scene there in the store. But it immediately shut me up because I'm thinking, maybe I can make her forget. If I'm really, really good, maybe I can make that go away. So it changed my behavior immediately.
But if the parent doesn't talk to them and discipline that way before, it's not going to have any effect.
If I had never known what the path was, that wouldn't have made any difference to me.
And keep her promise.
Yeah, I knew she would. I tried to pretend she wouldn't, but I knew she would. Back to the woodshed, it says. Now, there aren't too many woodsheds left, but he's talking about punishment. And again, I did not say punishment's not useful. It is. It's just not the only form of discipline. But she talks in here about Eli. And I agree with her. That's one of the saddest stories in the Bible. He spent his whole life serving God and then lost his own sons because he restrained them not. Just let them do whatever they wanted to do. And you have to wonder, when you step back from it, when it's not your own family, you step back from it and you wonder, why did they do that? It's so easy to help other people discipline their children, isn't it? In your head. If that were my kid, and so on, so on, so on, so on. But a lot harder to do. But you have to wonder why this man with considerable respect and power in the community just didn't do what his sons do for his sons what he should have done. Did they intimidate him? Maybe. He didn't want to have them mad at him. My son had 3 of the 6 mad at me yesterday at one time. That was kind of a record.
It's too late to do anything about that much, isn't it?
I did talk to Clay a little later. He said, I'm not mad at you. So that's good. That's encouraging. There are a lot of arguments against spanking right now. How many of you were spanked as children? Mother, you didn't raise your hand.
I can never remember being spanked once.
But you were spanked. Carol's got all hands up. When you think back on it, was it a good thing or a bad thing?
Very good thing.
Results.
Not for me personally. Yes. Overall, yes.
Not for you. Oh, yeah. It hurt.
That's mine.
Yeah. I remember the last one.
I do too.
Well, when I was, this has to be like 1974 or so, I had a teacher, graduate advisor, who was married but had no children. And she was one of those people that had gone all the way through school to get her PhD without working. Now, I'm a great believer in education. You all know that. But I do think there's times when you need to be in the real world for a while, because college life is insulated. I like it a lot, but it's insulated. It keeps you from some of the real world situations. Well, she had gone all the way through and gotten a doctorate in child development. Had no kids. But that's okay. You can know about things that you haven't personally experienced. But we were in a class, and she was notorious for coming and telling us what she heard on the news that morning or whatever. Well, she had heard on the news that... It was her neighbors. She said, I don't understand them at all. They are good people. They go to church. They help in the community. But they spank their children. Well, this is 1974. And we're all looking around going, well, why do you think they spank them? They go to church. You just said so. But she, that philosophy was already creeping in, you know, that many years ago. And she just couldn't understand how they could spank their children. Well, there's a real big difference between spanking and beating. And
but if you notice, they'll always use that term beating.
Yeah, yes. Always.
Yeah. You know.
And I've yet to see a two-year-old that a parent swatted on the behind when they're wearing a diaper that I would call beaten. Now, I've seen two-year-olds who were beaten. I'm not saying that. People do horrible things. But spanking is not beating. And my personal belief is that once children get to be a little bit older and you can talk and reason, that spanking's not as effective as it was when they were little. But that's a personal opinion that worked with my children. Tommy?
I would rather my daddy beat me
than talk to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there are certain children that spanking doesn't work well with.
I've controlled two with talking and two with spanking.
Yeah.
Or a mixture.
Yeah. So you have to know that child. You have to individualize them.
When I was in Illinois, I did daycare through the state. Mm-hmm. And there was a lady, I remember her first name, Peggy, but she had a little boy, Danny, who was 9 months old. And she had his degree in some kind of child development or whatever. And she was a big wig at whatever she did. But anyway, I could have eight children in my house. And one time she came to me, and she had said I was having a moment, and she said, Laura, you should never raise your voice to children. And she was right in her thing, whatever. But this kid at 9 months old, and I'm not exaggerating, she brought enough food for me to feed all those eight children that she was feeding this eight or 9 month old child. And I would say, Peggy, this is way too much food. No, this is what they da 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 da. And she was just, I was just like, she could not see that all this stuff was not correct. She wasn't living in the real world.
Yeah.
So one time, Danny, he was a little over a year or whatever, and she just lost it, and she started yelling. And I very calmly put my hand on her shoulder, and I said, Peggy, you should never raise your children or raise your voice to your children. And she looked at me, and it was this aha moment. She went, oh, touche. But it was like she didn't see anything
until she walked in that shoe.
But she did so many things that were by the book that were so wrong for that child, but she could not see it. She trusted in that book and didn't believe what was right in front of her. It's sad.
And, well, by the book is a pretty good thing for your starting point. It's for your foundation. And then you have to know that child. I mean, Kate was the kind of kid that spanking really didn't work on, because she just dug her little heels in and basically said, you can't make me.
I had two daughters who had to be reached in a totally different way. Mm-hmm. And one afternoon, they were really pushing my buttons. And I was trying desperately to finish something, probably sewing of some kind, I don't know. Anyway, the little one, she just went too far. Well, my favorite thing for them was, I didn't go get the switch. I sent them for the switch.
Cruel and unusual punishment.
So I said, go to the switch bush and bring me a switch. Well, she came back. I had the hardest time not just laughing that off, but I said, no, I'm going to go get it and you're going to be sorry. But I went away the rest of the afternoon. It dispelled my bad humor. I laughed at her all afternoon.
I think sometimes we fail to remember how difficult a job it is to be a stay-at-home mommy. And you've got these kids at different ages, different needs, different personalities, all coming at you. And you still have to do all the stuff you need to be doing, the laundry and the sewing, and well, not me for sewing, but cooking and those kinds of things. So it's a very, very stressful job. And that in-home child care, you couldn't pay me enough money.
It's hard.
Pay me enough money. It's very, very hard work. Very, very emotionally draining and physically draining. At least at a center, which I don't think is a better environment for children than in-home care, but as the adults at least have other adults to help spell them. But anyway, discipline, punishment, spanking, these are all things we need to be talking about, and those of us who've been through it and done it need to be helping those who are in it, Connie. You need to know we're there if you need to call somebody. We've all done that. And anything your children do, one of us has been through it. Maybe not all of us, everything, but somebody in this room has been through that.
Well, I've got kind of one of each. I've got the one that, you know, the disapproving look, it's tears and regret, and don't be mad at me, and the other one's the cross the arms, roll the eye.
Yeah. And you have to learn to work with those behaviors.
Yeah. Well, and I'm finding it hard sometimes to kind of strike a balance where they don't think I'm being unfair to them because I treat them differently about stuff.
Right.
Sit down and talk to them. Talk to them. I mean, you're just talking about early age. Believe me, they are smarter than we are.
Yeah.
They really are. So talk to them and continue to talk to them.
Right.
And you listen. Yes, yes. That's what I didn't do enough of. I did a lot later, but early I should have.
And explaining... you're not really explaining. You're just stating the differences between them. They already know. They know who they are. Mm-hmm. And my guess, you don't have to tell me, my guess is that Jason's the regretful one, mm-hmm. who's immediately sorry whenever something happens. So, you know, you can say to Zoe, you know, I handle your brother differently. And you know why? Because he tends to do... because they already know the difference. They got it figured out. So you can be very honest with them and say, Here are the reasons we have to work in these ways. And they get it. But you're right, listening. I didn't do enough listening.
I didn't either. Not early. I did later, but not early.
Yeah.
Maybe and a chance.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, as probably for most of us, as young parents, we want so much for our children to be perfect. And it takes a while to learn that they're people and they're not going to be perfect any more than we're perfect. And that because they're not perfect doesn't mean we're terrible parents. I always said I could make my children regret some behaviors. And I did. All right, we're kind of at the end of this little section, so I think we'll go ahead and stop. We're just a few minutes early. And we want to have time to talk about Margaret. Laura?
I was going to tell you really quick. When we first moved here, it was on a Sunday afternoon, and Jim was out of town. And I'm like juggling all this stuff, and Josh Cox came over that day, and they were only 9 at that time or whatever, and we're riding home in the van, and I know exactly where I was, but I'm in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I gotta buy the kids new socks and underwear and all this stuff, and the kids are arguing, and I'm driving home or whatever, and I'm thinking about it, and I go, and I'm wanting to say, there are 5 people in this family, well, and we're but what it comes out is there are 5 people in this underwear. And to this day, Josh and Jimmy remember that, you know, and they talk about it. But it was kind of funny because in the moment of being a busy parent, it was just that moment that kind of brought you back to reality.
That's some big underwear.
But it was funny, but I still remember it, and Josh still remembers that it's funny. But it was just a quick moment.
Yeah.
But parenting is parenting. You live to see another day, you know.
Yeah, that's the goal, to live to see another day.
Yes.